Okay, welcome back. Hour number two, and we're going to talk this hour about some things that you'll hear nowhere else on the radio, at least rarely. We're going to go live to Ukraine, to free Ukraine, to eastern Ukraine, the Donbass, Lugansk, and some very heroic, courageous people. Russell Bentley has been on this program many times before. It goes back 3-4 years when the last big conflict there occurred. We're right on the doorstep of apparently a major regional war, at the least. We don't know for sure what's going on. We did get a report or two the other day that Putin has ordered all ambassadorial staff out of Kiev, or Kyiv, however you want to pronounce it, and the second largest city in Ukraine. So if they are withdrawing their diplomatic personnel, that's usually an indication that they want those people safe and at home. Things certainly may be planned. As you know, there were talks last week between the U.S. and Ukraine, and the U.S. and the great leader Biden made it quite clear from the beginning, along with his Secretary of State Blinken, that there would be no concessions made whatsoever to Russia during the talks. So why bother? Now, today, allegedly, there were more talks between, I believe, Sergei Lavrov and Blinken. I don't know the outcome of those talks yet. We're looking into that right now. Another story from RT. Ukrainian troops train for missile launches near Crimea. See, it's not just Ukraine itself. It's the entire Crimea that is also being talked about as being a target by the Kiev government. This is not a good situation. Kiev displaced from one location and dispatched them to another. BM-21 Grad rocket systems for practice runs, they say. Well, we're going to find out much more about that with Russell Bentley, who is an American-born, of course, living over there now very happily, loves the country, loves the people. Last time we talked to Russell, he had just gotten married. Are you there, Russ? Can you hear me?
Hey, Jeff. Yeah, I'm here, and glad to be with you again, my friend.
Oh, yeah. It's been 3-4 years or something like that, but... how are you doing? How's your life there?
It's great. I'm, like you said, I'm married now. I'm married to a young school teacher. She's beautiful, brilliant, speaks perfect English. She's also an English teacher.
Wow.
And yeah. She's like my cameraman for the videos that I make, and really like my guardian angel here.
You're a lucky man. That's really nice to hear. You deserve it. Boy, you people have been through a lot. Let me ask you real quick to give everyone your website URL officially so we know where to send people to see your videos and to stay updated with you.
Sure. I was on Facebook for many years. They deleted my account a little more than a year ago. So now I'm on the Russian version of Facebook, which is called VKontakt or just VK. I have an account there, Donbass Tejas or just Russell Bentley. I also have a YouTube channel, Russell Bentley, that is probably one of my main ways of communicating now. I have a couple of websites, RussellTexasBentley.com, which is my old one and kind of an archive site, and then a new one called RussellTexasBentley.info. So those are the ways. YouTube's probably the best way for new people to get an idea of what I'm doing. I update at least a couple of times a week or a month, put new videos up there, and some of them are really quite interesting. We do stuff sometimes from the front lines. I also have a human aid fund that we started back in 2015. It's based on Russian Orthodox principles, Christian principles, and that's Donbass Humanitarian Aid, or DonbassHumeAid.com. Just look up Donbass Humanitarian Aid. It's right there at the top of the Google search, and you can see like what we've done with orphanages, schools, people that have been wounded by shelling, and stuff like that. So I'm got to pretty fair amount of media out.
You've done well. Oh, you've done great, Russ. This is amazing. I remember when you had virtually nothing except this program, and we were doing a lot, and now you've got your feet down and you're all over the place. Good. Okay.
Yeah.
You have
I really
also been
your support, yeah. Jeff, over the years. It's been a great help to us.
Oh, I'm more than happy. I'm honored to have you on and to help in any way I can. Just like the old days, we'll do it again, yeah, if we have to. Let's remind people that one of the things that Russell Bentley has done has put his life on the line doing charitable work, support work, relief work for the people of free Ukraine. And I don't know what you call that portion of that poor beleaguered country now, the eastern end of Donbass.
The Donetsk People's Republic. There's two republics that broke away, Donetsk and Luhansk People's Republics, after the Maidan coup in 2014, when the people here understood that what happened really was that the United States came in and installed a puppet government. A lot of genuine neo-Nazis, and I'm talking about guys with swastika flags, swastika tattoos that say Heil Hitler, and idolized this dude, Stepan Bandera, that was a Ukrainian Nazi collaborator back in the Second World War when the Germans occupied Ukraine. I mean, and was, you know, he was even worse than the German Nazis, man. He was responsible for, you know, extremely, you know, torture and mass murders. And there's still people that support him in Western Ukraine, and the United States came in and, you know, kind of took advantage of these idiots, these Nazis, and basically put them in power.
Well, that was Vicky Newland, Victoria Newland.
Yeah, it sure was.
And she spent, Newland, I think, that's right. That's what her name is. I think
that
she actually spent, $4 or $5 billion to pull that whole operation off. It was a lot of money we pumped in there to ruin that, to ruin that country. Yeah.
And she bragged about it.
She did. That's right. She's back now, you know. They've appointed her again.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
You know,
go ahead.
I mean, since this Maidan coup d'etat in 2014, the quality of life for Ukrainian people in general has just fallen off the cliff. I mean, you know, they are literally heating the Kiev-Borispol airport with firewood right now, and that's a fact. They're heating it with firewood. They don't have any gas. You know, they were stealing the gas that Russia was transiting through their Ukrainian pipeline, so Russia just has cut them off. And, I mean, it's the people, I mean, and not just this year, but in previous years, like even in Kiev, the capital city, which is the biggest city in Ukraine and the capital, there's whole, you know, sections of the city that don't have heating in the winter. And the way that the heating works, here is that, you know, the city, provides hot water, which, you know, heats the radiators, and they provide it for everybody, for all the apartments. The city of Kiev didn't pay Naftogaz, the Ukrainian gas company, a couple of $100 million that they owed, and so the Naftogaz just cut off the heat. And so, I mean, you understand that here there's a lot of you know, high-rise apartments, and if there's no heat in the apartment, then they have to shut the water off, because if there's unheated apartments,
well, the
water's
freezing,
the pipes,
of course,
it busts the pipes. So you got, you know, whole families, you know, old grandmas and stuff that have to go up and down, you know, every day to get water and bring back to their freezing cold apartments, you know. And so it's a real crime. You know, they've stolen all the gold. That was one of the first things they did after Maidan, was take all the gold reserves of Ukraine and ship them to New York. That's never, ever coming back. You know, they've, you know, 25% of all the prostitutes in the European Union are from Ukraine. You know, I mean, they're desperate people, and it's, it's just a tragedy. You know, there's no food on the grocery store shelves these days. And I mean, they're exporting, human slaves, and they're importing toxic and nuclear waste and just dumping it in the forest. I mean, it's...
Oh, come on. Oh, this is... They're turning it into a third world sewer.
They really are. They really are. And I mean, they don't care because they don't live there. But
right.
You know, it's what they're trying to do is make a failed state like a Somalia right on Russia's border.
Unreal.
That's what they're doing.
Unreal. And it used to be, let's go back 10, 15 years ago. Ukraine was quite a travel destination for men. A lot of American men would go over there looking for a beautiful, Ukrainian women are beautiful generally, and they'd go over there looking for wives. That was big business back then. And now you're telling me that 25% of the EU hookers all come from Ukraine. So those women were pressed into work that they never would have done. This is sickening.
It's really tragic. And, you know, if you go back even further to the days of the Soviet Union, you know, Ukraine was, first of all, the breadbasket. You know, I mean, they have probably the most fertile soil in the world.
That's right.
I mean, growing wheat, growing, you know, corn, all kinds of vegetables and stuff. I mean, you can still walk down the street here in the summertime and eat your lunch just off the trees. But it was also it was like the industrial powerhouse of the Soviet Union. And I mean, so, you know, this is like where they made rockets, they made airplanes, they made cars, they made all kinds of machinery. They had a very heavy duty chemical industry, a very heavy duty coal mining industry, steel making industry. You know, it was a real economic powerhouse. And it's I mean, after the Soviet Union was destroyed, you know, basically everything here got robbed, either by foreign investors or by local gangsters, oligarchs. But, you know, it's completely fallen off the cliff since 2014. And it's a real tragedy.
And that's just since we've been talking five, six years ago.
Yeah.
It's just gone to hell. That's sickening. So Donbass and Lugansk in the east are blossoming, it sounds like, as much as they can, given the circumstances.
You know, we do have a economic blockade by Ukraine, but by the West, the U.S. and the EU. I mean, we don't have any banks that work here because the U.S. has sanctioned any bank that operates in the Donbass republics or in Crimea. Can't do any business with the EU or with the USA. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. No regular banks are working here, which is a real, weight on our economy. You know, the borders are closed. The only way you can get in and out is through Russia.
Uh-huh.
I mean, there's a lot of hardships that have been imposed on the republics here, but we're surviving and we're doing much, much, much better than Ukraine. And even, I would say, than a lot of places in Europe these days, you know. I mean, because of this gas speculation thing, and you understand about the gas. If people hear, the Russians are manipulating the gas market and impoverishing European people by charging more for gas, that's really not the case at all. What actually happened is that the Russians had provided, they made contracts, you know, like multi-year contracts with European countries. They said, look, we'll sell you this gas at $250 per 1,000 cubic meters of propane blue fuel gas, and it'll be a steady deal. You know, maybe the market goes up, maybe the market goes down. $250 per 1,000 cubic meters is a very reasonable price. But when the COVID thing happened a couple of years ago, 2020, the EU, led by the geniuses from Poland, they took the Russian gas company to court, and they demanded, because when the lockdowns happened, the price went down to about $125 per 1,000 cubic meters. So even though they had signed contracts, the EU went to like an economic world court and said, hey, we demand that Russia sell us gas based on market prices. They demanded it. They took them to court. It was a crooked court. The court ruled against Russia, and even though they had signed contracts, they said, okay, Russia has to sell by market price. And the Russians said, okay. So they had to sell in 2020 for about 125 per 1,000 cubic meters, which is about, you know, half of what their contract had stipulated. Then the next year, 21 rolls around, and all of a sudden the market shoots up. It skyrockets, you know what I mean? So it was up earlier in the end of 2021. It was at $2,000 for per 1,000 cubic meters. Mm-hmm. And the Russians, you know, and now, of course, Europe's screaming again. And the Russians are like, well, tough darts, little ranger. You guys are the ones who demanded it. This is the market price. You know, pay it or else we won't sell you the gas. So it's right now it's over $1,000. I mean, like, and here's something that's real interesting, is that Germany was smart enough to keep their contract. They kept their contract for like 250, 260, 1,000 cubic meters. And right now what they're doing is they're buying all the gas they can get from Russia, and then they're reselling it to other European countries at like 800, you know, 900 per 1,000 cubic meters.
So much for the EU, huh? That's funny.
I gotta laugh. You know, it's a real, you know, so the Russians didn't have anything to do with it. They offered Europe a great deal. You know, Europe signed for it, and then when they thought they could take advantage, they tried to screw Russia, and it backfired on them. So if somebody tells you that Russia is ripping off the EU, you know, that's just not true at all, and it's actually the opposite. The EU shot themselves in the foot, and, you know, they're lucky that Russia's having mercy on them, which is really what they're doing.
Well, what is really amazing, and I think we talked about this in the past, we must have. You remember the famous psychic Edgar Cayce from the 1920s and 30s? Well, Edgar Cayce, in one of his trance readings, he was quite gifted, said that one day, now this is when the Bolshevik Revolution had occurred and Soviet Russia was a fait accompli. In one of his readings, he said, much to the shock of the people who were sitting there writing everything down, he said while he was in a trance, which they did, and he gave 14,000 readings altogether. He said, one day, Russia will be the light unto the world. Well, right now, Russia is arguably the last real functional Christian country on the face of the earth. And they're even offering to invite American conservatives to come over and settle on land in Siberia.
That's a fact.
Vladimir Putin, if you like him or you don't like him, the guy is clearly the number one statesman on the planet. Period. He's
for sure.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. We talked about this many times in the past. The guy has only grown in stature. Now, that brings us to where we are right now. And I don't know what's going to happen. That's why I got contact back with you. You would know better than anyone how to project at least a guesstimate on where we are in this situation. I read the other day, as I said, that Putin had ordered the recall, or Lavrov, of all diplomatic staff from Ukraine. Is there any truth to that, first of all, as far as your sources tell you?
Yes, in fact, now it's not all diplomatics, but there has been more than 50 family of diplomats in Ukraine from the Kiev embassy and from two Russian consulates that have been evacuated. It's not, I mean, the diplomats are still working there. The embassy and the consulates are still open, but they have begun evacuating their family members, which, you know, is the first step. You know, I would say
That's right. First step.
you know, that'll be, if the Kiev embassy does become, you know, if the diplomats evacuate and the embassy gets shut down, you know, that's going to be, you know, that's going to be like the cocking of the hammer on the pistol, and you know it's coming then. You know, it's the other thing, too, the OSCE, which is like a European supposedly peacekeeping monitoring organization that's here in Donetsk. You know, that's what we've always said, kind of the canary in the coal mine here would be, if the OSCE all of a sudden leaves Donetsk, then, you know, that'll be our sign that...
Gotcha.
You know, the Ukrainians are getting ready to attack. And, gotcha. You know, it's such a hair trigger situation here right now. I mean, it's, you know, the Ukrainians are massed along the front line of the Donbass and Luhansk People's Republics. It's about 200-mile front, and there's over 125, maybe 150,000 Ukrainian soldiers on that front on 200 miles. That's half. I mean, it's literally half of the entire Ukrainian army that's on our front line now. And I'm telling you, where I live in Donetsk, it's about 5 miles, not to the front, but to Ukrainian army bases behind the front on their side. I mean, to the actual front, you know, it's maybe wow. 3 miles. When, you know, wow. I can hear machine guns. I can hear mm-hmm. artillery and mortars, mm-hmm. you know, in my backyard quite frequently.
Wow, Russ, this is amazing. I know where you were before. We did spend a lot of time describing all this. We had pictures. We had everything. You are, for all intents and purposes, you're right at the front line. Okay, you're there. Now, with 125,000 Ukraine troops along the 200-mile border between the Donbass Republic and Western Ukraine, or whatever you want to call it now, that has to be stacked up to the alleged 145,000 Russian troops that are to the north and spread out, I guess, to Belarus. I don't know where they are exactly, but there's an equal a number of troops approximately. Is that correct?
Yeah, there's an equal number of troops, but, you know, the training, the morale, the dedication, and the equipment of the Russian troops, you know, eclipse, you know, the Ukrainians, you know, by orders of magnitude. You know, it is estimated through, you know, the Ukrainian military has done some, you know, in the last year has done several internal surveys, you know, where they go to, you know, military units and they give out these anonymous, you know, surveys for them to fill out, for the actual soldiers to fill out. And it comes back that 80% of them say they won't even fight. You know, they won't shoot against Donbass. They won't fight if the Russians come in to liberate Ukraine. So the majority of Ukrainian soldiers don't even want to fight. Uh-huh. You know, there's 20% that are, you know, these neo-Nazi battalions like Pravi Sector and Azov and Idar, and you know,
Azov is still
there. Genuine.
Okay, I remember Azov.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Nazis don't, you know, the Nazis will fight. There's really not a lot of people in the West know this, but there's a lot of ISIS terrorists that came from Syria, that came from Iraq, and that are here now fighting alongside the Ukrainian army.
Well, they were there when we were talking 5-6 years ago. They were in Odessa. They were, the hell were they?
They were
coming in. I remember this.
Uh-huh. And they still have been. And, there's a lot of them here. And these are, you know, very dangerous dudes. They're, very combat experienced. They're totally ruthless and merciless and, a very dangerous enemy.
Yeah.
You know,
all right.
And then
go ahead.
There's also a bunch of, the war criminals, you know, I mean, Russia and Donbass republics have been, you know, documenting every war crime that's been done by the Ukrainian army in this war. And we know, you know, who's the general that ordered to bomb the school, you know, who's the colonel that bombed the hospital. You know, we have all this documented. And when we do liberate Ukraine, those guys are going on trial, and they'll probably spend the rest of their lives repairing all the damage that they've done. So those guys, Nazis, the ISIS, the war criminals, you know, these guys will fight, but that's only about 20%. And, you know, the most important thing to understand, it's not a Russian invasion. It's a Russian liberation of the occupation by the United States and the, you know, Nazi collaborator governments. You know,
I've been using that word. Now, it is, it's to liberate Ukraine. It's exactly what I've said. And I'm very glad to hear you repeat it. I hope the morale in Donbass Republic and the Lugansk Republic, I hope the morale is up. The world, the intelligent part of the world, is on your side. They understand what's going on. I won't say the rank and file sheep understand it, but those who are informed truly understand. Ukraine needs to be flushed. It's like a toilet that's running over. It's got to be cleaned. It's got to be restored. And there's only one way that can happen. And I've heard that if Putin gives the go, Ukraine might last 6 days. That's it. The Russian military will roll right through it. How do you think?
It will. Yeah, that's absolutely correct. I mean, it'll be like Georgia back in 2008. You know, when Saakashvili attacked South Ossetia. You know, it'll be a weekend affair and lunch in Kiev on Monday.
Well, I'm in favor of it. I imagine most everyone in the East is also in favor of it, and probably a lot of people who live in Ukraine who are sick and tired of this the looting of their country, the looting of their culture. This country has been destroyed from what you're telling us. This is sickening.
Yep. And, you know, it is an existential security threat to the Russian Federation to have, a mad dog failed country literally on their border, you know, one that's controlled by NATO and the United States, which are, you know, real enemies of Russia who've, you know, tried every single thing they could to, you know, disrupt Russia's development. You know, I mean, Russia obeys international law. You can't say, you know, that, you know, Russia has 700 military bases around the world. You can't say that Russia has attacked, you know, a dozen different countries in the last three decades, you know, and basically destroyed them, you know, bringing democracy and yet completely destroying them. I mean, you look at Yugoslavia, you know, you look at Iraq, you look at Afghanistan, you look at, you know, Libya, you know, you look at Ukraine. All these places have been destroyed by U.S. and NATO intervention, you know, and it hasn't done the people there any good at all. And in fact, destroyed their quality of life and, you know, increased their suffering, you know, by orders of magnitude. So, you know, Russia's, you know, really is the good guy here, and the U.S., you know, simply is not.
I'm so glad you're on again and we're able to talk about this and present reality like we did in the past. This is crucial information, and right now there are a lot of people listening. There will be a lot passing this program around. Here we are at the absolute ugliest part of the decimation of Ukraine. I don't know how much worse it can get. I'm not there. But what I'm hearing from you is that the sentiment among the people in Donbass Republic and Luhansk Republic and Crimea is absolutely resolute. They are not going to allow this to be reversed under any circumstances. Fair statement?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, first of all, you know, we don't have anywhere to retreat to. Like I said, the front line is basically the city limits. Yeah. You know, there's nothing behind us but our homes and our families. You know, it'll be like the Alamo. If the Ukrainians come in here to attack, assault the Donbass People's Republic or the Lugansk People's Republic, you know, we'll fight to the last man and the last bullet. And that is no exaggeration, and it's not rhetoric. It's actually what we're going to do. It's basically what we've been doing, you know, this whole time, almost 8 years now. You know, the guys at the front, you know, they're protecting their own homes, you know. I mean, not only that, but the people of Donbass, this area of Ukraine and Russia, the Don River Basin, you know, these are legendary people for 1,000 years. They used to be called the Scythians, you know, back in the Bible times, you know.
Yes, I've heard
the name.
They've
been here ever since. They're indigenous people that have never really been defeated. You know, they're hard working. This is coal mining area, you know, so the men here are real tough. You know, they've been through, like my godfather, he's a Orthodox priest, you know, and my wife asked him once why there's so many miracles that happen in this part of the world. And he said, because this part of the world has been flooded with blood over the years, over the centuries. And I mean, this was, a main part of the Soviet Bolshevik Revolution. It was the center of the Russian Civil War after the revolution. No, this was part of the Soviet Union that was occupied by the German Nazis in the Second World War. And, you know, the people here, you know, they're smart, they're tough, they're friendly, they're hardworking, you know, they're very generous. But, you know, if you come here with a weapon, you will die here, you know, and that's the way that it's always been here. I mean, this is like the area of Cossacks, you know, so it's like Russian cowboys. And they don't, you know, they don't take any BS off of anybody.
I remember when we spent all those programs together in the past. I don't know how many, there were a lot of them. And you showed some video once of Christmas in downtown Donetsk, I guess. Where was it? It was Christmas.
In the center of downtown Donetsk.
We just made
another video with Christmas this year too. They have make a huge Christmas tree, and like everybody comes out and they have like concerts and I mean, there's thousands of people there. I mean, this is, you know, Russia and Donbass, you know, these are Christian nations. We, you know, it's Russian Orthodox Christianity, which I am a convert to. And, you know, it's like, you know, as a Christian, you know, I see, you know, all this, you know, disgusting stuff that happens in the Catholic Church with these pedophiles and
that's not a church. It's and organized then, pedophilia. I know it. Everybody knows it.
It really is.
Now. Yeah.
And then the thing is with the Protestant religion, like me, you know, growing up in Texas in the South, you know, they have these mega churches, you know, and it's like a football stadium. And basically, you know, I mean, and these preachers that, you know, are multi millionaires. They got private jets, you know, diamond encrusted Rolex watches. And that ain't the way that Jesus.
They're fraud. They're criminal frauds, Russ. They're criminal frauds, and everybody with a brain knows it. They're disgusting people. I couldn't
they
agree
worship
more
money.
With you. Oh, yeah, that's
and, you know,
their, well
in the Bible,
that and Satan. Yeah.
You know, in the Bible, there's a quote from the Bible that a lot of people get wrong. You know, and they say, "Oh, money is the root of all evil," and that's not the Bible quote. The Bible quote correctly is, "The love of money is the root of all evil."
There you go.
And these mega churches, that's all they do. They preach the love of money. They preach to rich people and say, "Oh, God is rewarding you because you're rich, because you're good," and they're punishing the poor people because they're poor, because they're bad. So you don't have to worry about the poor people. And the richer you are, the better you are. And that's exactly the opposite of what Christ taught. And here in Donbass and in Russia, the Russian Orthodox religion, I mean, to me, it's like still the real Christianity based on the teachings of Jesus Christ. You know, I mean, my godfather is an Orthodox priest. I have two very good friends. One's a Orthodox priest. One's a Orthodox monk. You know, and these guys, you know, they walk the walk. They live it, you know.
Got it.
As their principles.
Well,
they don't, you know, they don't have gold Rolexes, and they don't have little teenage boyfriends. So to me, they're the real deal.
Good. All right. Now, what I'd like to do is spend our remaining time here talking about the military conflict.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, what do you rate the chances?
I believe that it's more than 90% chance that before the end of March, Russia will liberate Ukraine.
Okay.
On my YouTube channel, Russell Bentley, I made a video about exactly that recently. There's a lot of provocations by the U.S. and by Ukraine. And by
NATO, too. Yeah.
I mean, they're all shipping in more weapons right now, including, and this is a fact reported by Sergei Shoigu, the defense minister of Russia, that botulism poison, biological weapons, and also chemical weapons have been imported already to the front line. And this is specifics. You know, it's not like saying, oh, I heard they brought something in. It's like they brought in botulism. There's 120 U.S. mercenaries in the city of Avdiivka on the Ukrainian side. They have this botulism poison in, 40 millimeter containers. They said, they imported in October, they imported the antidote for it. And then in November, they imported the actual poison itself. I mean, well, so this is, this is specific, legitimate reports from as serious of a source as you can get, which is the Russian military,
very good.
Defense minister.
Yep.
So there's that going on. Maybe in December, in late November, the Ukrainians poisoned the river that 90% of the water for the cities of the Donbass republics, and also some people on the Ukrainian side too. They put raw sewage from Kharkov, and then they put some chemicals in it in Slavyansk. And, for almost 6 weeks, we couldn't use the tap water for anything, even after it was filtered through the water filtering station. I mean, you couldn't even really take a bath in it, dude. It was like greasy. It stunk like chemicals. And, it was really horrible.
They're going to pay, Russ. They're going to pay for this. I think Putin has had it with the whole NATO bullshit and all this pressure, all the lies, all the disgusting behavior that has nothing whatsoever to do with international statesmanship or diplomacy. This is thuggery. And I just really hope that he orders to clean it out. Go in there and clean it out. It's got to happen.
Well,
I just can't see it continuing.
I'm highly confident that that's what's going to happen, I mean, it's going to be, it's going to be tough. Nobody hates war more than people that have suffered under it. And we have suffered under it here.
Yeah.
Both soldiers and civilians for 7 years. And we're ready. Yeah. I mean, it's like popping a boil, It's going to be painful, but it's got to be done. And it's the only way to make things better.
Yes.
And, I mean, Putin, Russia has given every single chance. This latest deal, this diplomatic thing with the U.S., NATO, and the OSCE, that wasn't, it gets mischaracterized as an ultimatum. But what it really was a last-ditch attempt to make a peaceful transition, And the thing is, Russia today, and they couldn't do it before because they didn't have the economic and military strength to do it, but now they do. The Russian army, the Russian military, which spends less than one tenth what the U.S. military has spends
of its budget.
The Russian military is much, much stronger now. They have weapons that the United States has no defense against, and
hypersonic missiles. I understand. I'm with you.
Yeah, and they're basically. I mean, if the U.S. and Russia are to get into or were to get into an actual military confrontation, it would be the same as if Vladimir Putin, who has a 8th degree black belt in judo and 7th degree in taekwondo, this guy's one of the most accomplished martial artists in the world, and and you imagine that if him and Joe Biden got into a street fight.
Oh, please. Oh, God. Here's the other side of the coin. We have talk that there will be probably tactical nukes needed at some point in what we expect to be the liberation of Ukraine. Does that necessarily, are you talking about the potential? Now, right now, off the east coast of the U.S., and many of our listeners, you people out there know, that the Russians, and probably the Chinese have a couple, they have submarines right now underwater, just sitting there month after month, and then they'll be replaced with a fresh unit, and they're ready to fire intermediate-range ballistic missiles against major American military and civilian targets, whatever it's called for. That's sitting there right now. These submarines are 100, 200 miles offshore. They'd have 2 to 3 minutes warning, and then you got boom, and New York is gone. Boom, Boston is gone. Boom, whatever. I don't care. They can take anything out they want. So that's a possibility. We hope it doesn't go that far. But do you see this use of tactical nukes getting out of hand if, in fact, it happens during the liberation of Ukraine?
Well, I can tell you this, first of all, that Russia will not and does not need to use any kind of nuclear weapons in Ukraine at all.
Good.
So that's, there's
good.
Zero chance of Russia using any kind of nukes, tactical or otherwise.
I'm worried zero about the chance. NATO people. I'm worried about the NATO people using
them,
not Russia.
If they do, I mean, and Putin has laid all his cards on the table, and he said it, you know, specifically. He says,
yeah.
if Russians are attacked, then we're not only going to take out the place and the people where the attack came from, we're going to take out the place and the people where the orders came from.
Very good.
And so, I mean, that's, you don't have to be a genius to understand exactly what that means, you know. And if, you know, and it could get out of hand, you know. I mean, with, you know, Biden and the people around him right now, you know, mental competence is not their strong suit, you know.
No.
And,
no.
I mean, even without nukes, the thing is, if the United States and Europe continue to provoke even after Ukraine is liberated, you know, the Russians, again, they don't have to use nukes. You know, their energy and their economic power, especially aligned with China, they can destroy the U.S. and EU economically, which would be, you know, as destructive and as painful as a nuclear attack. I mean,
the EU gets
more than 40% of its energy from Russia.
I know.
It's interesting too.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't know that the United States gets 7% of its energy from Russia. That's like more than 500,000 barrels
per
day of Russian oil.
Okay, let me go back to this other issue. If the thugs in the regime, I don't know what you'd call it, dictatorship in Kiev, decide to invade, the Russians will have to come down, I assume, from the north and try to circle around in front of them tactically, but there will be so much air superiority involved that this is going to be a very interesting textbook war. They will eviscerate the Ukraine army. That's the way I see it. Now, what you said is fascinating, because I think Putin, from my perspective here, I'm just an observer, I think he's gone so far above and beyond the call of normal diplomacy that they are ready to go. And if he said that we will take out the people who ordered the use of tactical nukes, that we're talking about Washington, we're talking about the Pentagon, and that's what he's talking about without saying it. That's the language of diplomacy. And honestly, I think a lot of the world is sick and tired of the U.S. doing this bullying crap that they do all over the planet. They're thugs. It's a thug nation now. That's not to say the American people are thugs. We are in the hands of international globalists, and you know who they are. And that's the problem. So I hope that Putin has come to the end of his patience. It's time. And I'm not wanting war. I'm not pro-war, but I hope he takes at least Ukraine, and to the West, he needs a buffer. He needs a buffer. Somebody told me he may go to the borders of Eastern Germany and leave those other states in Eastern Europe independent, but they will be under the umbrella of Russia. They will be a buffer. And I think that that's entirely appropriate if that happens. The Russians are surrounded. The Americans don't understand. It's like there were troops, 150,000, 200,000 troops, fully armed and capable, just across the border in Mexico, or just across the border in Canada. We would be surrounded like Russia is on the west and the south.
Yep, that's true, you know. And, you know, it remains to be seen how far the Russian army will go. But, you know, the fact of the matter is it can go as far as it wants. And if it wants to go to Germany, it can. And, I mean, I don't think it will. I think that what's going to happen is they're just going to clean out Ukraine, and they'll probably even leave Western Ukraine, which is where, you know, basically the hardcore Nazis are generally from. I think they'll go as far as Kiev and, you know, in this first move, and then, stop and say, all right, now this is the new deal. What do you think about that? Let's talk. You know, I don't think that they're going to go, you know, in one fell swoop all the way to Germany.
Okay.
But they can if they want. If the Russian and Ukrainian armies fight each other, there's absolutely, you know, I mean, it's like Putin fighting Biden or something, you know. The Russians will have complete air superiority.
Yeah.
And basically what's happening now is the EU and NATO and the USA are sending in as much weapons as they can, you know, to make it be like a guerrilla warfare, you know, after the, defeat of the Ukrainian army.
Got it. Got it. Very good. Are they still sniping and killing your civilians, your people across the line of demarcation, or do they stop?
Yes, they are, and they're moving up. I mean, the U.S. and EU secret services, Canadian, British SAS, are continuing to train and arm snipers. You know, they use the Barrett 50 cal sniper rifle, which is basically if you get hit with that, it blows you to pieces.
Yeah.
You know, and they're highly trained snipers. They're very dangerous. I have still a lot of friends that work on the front line as soldiers and, you know, guys that, you know, who literally, you know, laugh at death, you know, but, you know, now they're saying, you know what, it's getting pretty, you know, they're not laughing now because it's such a heavy duty situation, you know. There was a guy. This is a really sad story, but it gives you an understanding of what kind of people we are fighting against. There was a guy in this town called Alexandrovka, about 2 miles from where I live. And that's a frontline position. Snipers work there against civilians. There was a guy going down the street, you know, civilian guy. He's in a wheelchair because 3 or 4 years ago, his house got bombed. And then one of his legs got blown off by shelling, you know, artillery.
Yeah.
And so he's going down the street in his wheelchair, and the sniper shoots him in the one leg that he has left. So he lives, and he goes to the hospital, but they had to cut off his other leg too, you know. And, you know, and there's some Nazi over there on the Ukrainian side laughing about that. And that's a true story. It's not some propaganda. That actually happened just a couple of miles from where I live.
Unreal. Well, I know the last time we talked, you had lost your commander, one of the greats. They assassinated him. Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. You knew him personally. I remember that.
Yep.
How is the, don't give me any obviously strategic information, but how is the defensive military now compared to what it was 5, 6, 7 years ago when we were talking?
Well, I mean, we've basically transitioned from, you know, being basically a people's militia or partisans, you know.
Got it.
Fighting with shotguns and, you know, deer rifles to a very expertly trained, very serious, highly disciplined army. You know, I mean,
good.
It used to be that, you know, if you had a gun, you know, you were in the militia. And now, you know, I mean, it's like everybody, you know, they have the same uniform. You know, everybody has to wear their helmet when they're on the front and their bulletproof vest. You know, everybody's supposed to be shaved every day, keep their weapons clean and all that. It's like the like the U.S. Army or the Russian Army or any other professional army in the world.
I don't think you want to be like the U.S. Army anymore.
Except for the transgender stuff.
yeah, man, it's unbelievable. All right, so right now you'd say 90-95% within the next, 2 months, there'll be a move?
Yeah, before the end of March.
Okay, all right, February, March. All right, well, we will see. Is the terrain there frozen now?
It's actually, it's been a fairly warm winter.
Mild.
A lot of days, it's like above freezing during the day and below freezing during the night. There's snow on the ground. And there has been some, you know, some pretty, you know, very cold days, stretches of a few days. But Right now, right. It's not good. Weather for driving tanks. You know, I mean,
Got it.
You know, they say that if, you know, either the summertime or in the winter when the ground is completely frozen, that's the time
Correct.
To move heavy armor.
Right.
But right now would not be a very good time for that.
All right.
I mean, but you understand again that, you know, the Ukrainians, you know, they're less than 10 miles from the center of Donetsk. And
wow.
Their plan, if they attack this time, what they did back in 2014 and 15, they tried to go around the cities to seal the border with Russia. And that
uh-huh.
didn't work at all, because when they're out in the open, you know, they're vulnerable to artillery and Grad rocket fire. And they basically
right.
got annihilated out in the open. So if they come in this time, they're going to come straight into the city. Like I said, it's 10 miles from their position to less than 10 miles to the center of our major cities. And
right.
and to use the civilians here as human shields against Russian air and artillery. And that's the big danger. And the only way that Russia can prevent that from happening and turning this into, you know, a really horrible, you know, Yugoslavia, Grozny type urban warfare
right.
is if the
right.
Russians move first. They have to make their move first. And I'm quite certain that they will, because there's, you know, every reason to do so, and there's no good reason not to.
Not to. Understood. Russell, thank you. Great to talk to you again, my friend. You be safe. And if you're available next Monday, I've got an hour for you. So think it over. Let me know, whatever. But we've got a great update from you tonight. Thank you for that.
All right, dude. I appreciate it very much, Jeff. And you can count on me next Monday, too, bro. So
okay. All right.
Let's be in touch.
Okay. All right. My best to you and to your wife. And we'll talk on Monday. Be well.
All right. Thanks. Bye.
Okay. Russell, Texas Bentley. Talk about an ambassador of American goodwill. There's one for you. Okay. We'll be back with more right after this. Hang on.